The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. That's the opening to the book of Proverbs. And I'd invite you to take your Bible out and begin finding that book, because I want to spend some time in the book of Proverbs here today. The book of Proverbs, as we look at it, is primarily a collection of Solomon's wisdom. That's the way the book opens. This is the wisdom that is from Solomon. But as we see these first seven verses, we learn several other things about this book. We learn that it is for both the young and the old to gain knowledge, to gain wisdom, to gain discretion. We learn it is for both the wise to gain more wisdom, but it's also for the foolish to learn wisdom and to grow in their own wisdom. The book of Proverbs is designed to increase our knowledge and to teach us how to apply that knowledge in certain situations and in certain ways. And I think we would do well to spend time studying Proverbs over and over again. Now, before I get into this lesson, we're going to be looking here at the first nine chapters of Proverbs this morning, which sounds like a lot of material, and it is a lot of material, but I want to give a brief explanation about why I'm presenting this lesson here this morning, and also the lesson this evening. We're going to be taking a look at Proverbs chapter 31 this evening, but I want to give just a brief explanation as far as why that is that I'm doing this. This coming Saturday, I will be presenting some lessons to some young people in Lufkin, Texas, and I'm very excited about that. I'm looking forward to being with them. But the topic that I'm speaking on is going to be the book of Proverbs. And these are some of the lessons that I'm going to be presenting them. And so I'm not using you as guinea pigs. I think that these things are good for everyone here. But I wanted to share some of the things that I've been studying the last couple weeks with you before I go and present it to those young people there. So today's lessons come from that material that I've been working on. Although I might not present it exactly in the same way when I get there, we might have a little bit more give and take than we will in this setting and so forth. But now, I also want to say this, because for some of you who have been studying with us here at this congregation for several months, you may be wondering or thinking in your mind, we just covered Proverbs not too long ago, and you're right. On Wednesday nights, we studied Proverbs not that long ago. So some of the things that we're going to say here today, both this morning and this evening, may sound familiar to a great number of you. But it shocked me when I look back at when we taught that. That's been a year ago now that we went over the book of Proverbs. And so it is always good to be reminded of the things in this book. It is always good to be reminded about what this book teaches us and how it helps us grow in knowledge. Once again, so that we can become more wise, so that we can come to a greater degree of knowledge about God and how He expects us to live our lives. So this morning, what I want to do is I want to consider Proverbs chapters 1 through 9. And this is going to be an overview. We're not going to have the time to go into every detail. But I think that if we can understand what's going on in Proverbs chapter 1 through 9, it'll go a long way to helping us understand the remainder of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapters 1 through 9 are written from the perspective of a father to his son. In fact, we see that beginning in verse 8. After you get through that opening section that I read at the beginning of our lesson, there in verse 8 is where we really pick up with the momentum of the discussion here in chapters 1 through 9, where the text says, "Hear, my son, your father's instructions, and do not forsake your mother's teaching." Picture we're supposed to have in our mind as we read this is a father giving advice to his son, a father giving wise counsel to his son. Perhaps before his son goes out on his own or embarks on his own life, the father says, "These are some things you need to know, son, about life, about God, about how you're supposed to be in this world." And what the father does in the following chapters as he's talking with his son is he sets a choice before his son. Son, you can be wise in your life. You can do wise things. You can make good choices. Or you can be foolish with your life. And you can make bad choices. And that's the choice that the Father offers the Son. Are you going to choose wisdom or are you going to choose foolishness? And so the Father offers these two choices to the Son. And he also offers all of these pros and cons. If you choose foolishness, these are the pros that you can expect to gain with that. But these are the consequences, the bad things that will come. Likewise, if you choose wisdom, these are the good things that will come from that. And here are some of the negative things that might come from that as well. And by the time the ninth chapter closes, the Father encourages his Son to choose wisdom, to be wise in his life. But the first two chapters is where he sets this choice before him, at least in the most clear terms. Chapter 1, beginning in verse 8, down through chapter 2, the end of chapter 2, the Father sets this choice before his Son. He says, here's the choice you have. The Father begins by setting this choice before his Son, and this is a choice that everyone is going to make, a choice that not only the Son in the book of Proverbs will make, but the choice that you and I are called upon to make as well. We will all choose between wisdom and foolishness. We will make this choice in our lives as a whole. That is, we will choose to be wise men and women or foolish men and women on the overall kind of perspective of our life. But it's also a choice and a decision that we make every single day of our lives, every single action. Is this going to be a wise choice we make, or is this going to be a foolish choice that we make? But the Father doesn't just present it as a choice. He doesn't just present it as choose to be wise or choose to be foolish. That would be maybe a little mundane. That would be kind of boring. So the Father presents this choice in the terms of competing voices. There are two voices calling out to you. There are two voices trying to attract your attention. One is the voice of wisdom. One is the voice that calls you to try and be wise. The other is the voice of folly. And folly tries to entice you to be foolish with your choices. And that's what he says. Look down at chapter 1 and verse 10. One day, the Father says, foolishness is going to come calling you. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. We throw in your lot with us. We shall all have one purse. That's what foolishness says. He says sinners will come along one day and they're going to entice you to follow them into foolishness. They're going to call you to be foolish in your own life. They call out for us, these sinners do, folly does, calls out for us to join them in horrible, horrible things. They say, come, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us kill the innocent. Let us go out and have a good time. And no reason for it, just other than the fact that it'll be fun. It'll be sport for us. And folly also tells us, these sinners who come and entice us, they call out and they say, and it'll be good for you. It'll be fun. There will be all kinds of good benefits, wealth and spoils and enjoyment will come if you follow us, if you come and be foolish with us. At the same time, the Father says, at the same time that folly is calling you, at the same time that the voice of the sinners are calling out to you in the streets, enticing you to come to them, at the same time, wisdom is also calling. Skip down with me to verse 20 of chapter 1. He set up in verse 11 verse 10 and 11 that sinners entice you. They call out to you saying, come. But in verse 20, there's an altogether different voice calling out. In verse 20, it says, wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. At the end of the noisy street, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings. And this is what she says. How long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. Because I called and you refused. I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention. And you neglected all my counsel and you did not want my reproof. I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes. When your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. Wisdom calls out in the same way that sinners do. But wisdom has a different message. Wisdom calls out for you to take her advice, for you to listen to her voice. Wisdom cries out begging for someone, anyone to pay attention. She's calling out at the gates of the city, calling out on the streets, just begging for anyone to come in and be wise with her. The text tells us that wisdom looks on as people reject her over and over again. Everybody wants to go where the sinners are going. Everyone wants to go where the foolish are going and do what they're doing because there are riches, there is enjoyment, there is spoils there. And wisdom watches helplessly and cries out in the streets, please, please listen to me. And then in verse 26, as we read, wisdom can't help but laugh when people reject her and then follow into the footsteps of folly and fall in that. Wisdom can't help but laugh when fools run right into the trouble after they reject her advice, her wise counsel. Wisdom, however, promises that if you follow her advice, if you do the things that she counsels you to do, then life will be good. Life will be safe. Skip down. We didn't read this far, but look at how she ends her saying there in verse 32 and 33. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them. Sinners promised you good things. They promised you enjoyment. They promised you life's blessings. But the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me, wisdom says, shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. So we have these competing voices. Wisdom calls out, cries out for someone to pay attention, someone to listen. At the same time, folly is crying out, saying, follow me, I will give you riches, I will give you spoils, I will give you enjoyment. So the question the father asks is, which one are you going to choose? Son, you're going to have to make this choice. Are you going to listen to the voice of the sinners, or are you going to listen to the voice of wisdom? Folly promises you wealth. Folly promises you a good time. But wisdom promises you life and security and peace. So the question is, which choice is more worthwhile? Which choice is more worth your time? Which choice is more worth your effort? Which choice will produce the greatest results in your life? Isn't that how we should decide anything? What's going to produce the greatest result in your life? What's going to be best for you? That's the way we're taught to think about things. We're taught to think about number one. And I would suggest to you that on a very practical level, that's what the book of Proverbs does. It asks you to consider what will be good for your life. Will it be good for your life to follow foolishness? Or will it be good for your life to follow wisdom? And so that's what the remainder of these chapters look at. In chapters 3 and 4, the father presents wisdom to the son. Here's wisdom, son. You answer the question. Is it worth it? Is it worth it to be wise? Is it worth it to follow in the footsteps of wisdom? There in chapter 3, the father picks up and he asks his son to listen to him. My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandment. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. The father speaks up. He says, listen to me. Remember the advice that I'm giving you, son, because what I'm giving you is important. It's something that you need to hear and you need to keep in your mind. He continues on in chapters 3 and 4 and he tells him about wisdom and about the things that wisdom will produce in your life. And just to summarize briefly what he says, we're going to read some of this, but just to summarize briefly, the father says, wisdom will produce good in your life. Wisdom will produce good things in your life if you follow her call. Look at chapter 3, beginning in verse 3. Do not let kindness and truth leave you, he says. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart, so you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. Honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce. So your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. My son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father corrects the son in whom he delights. He says, listen, if you're good, If you do wise things, if you follow God, if you obey God, then there are some things that you can expect to be produced in your life. He says in verse 4, you will have a good reputation among men if you're wise, if you follow wisdom. Your paths will be straight. You won't have to be concerned about running off the road or something like that. That's not a physical kind of thing going on there. He's talking about the path of your life. It'll be a straight shot. You'll know where you're headed. You'll know where you're going. There will be no need to deviate. In verse 8, he says that you will have healing and refreshment. In verse 10, he says, if you are good, if you are wise, if you follow the voice of wisdom, your barns will be filled and your vats will be overflowing. All of the abundantly good things in life will be yours if you are wise, if you follow wisdom. He continues in verse 13 and he tells them some more things about wisdom and the produce it gives in your life. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. For her profit is better than the profit of silver, and her gain better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire compares with her. Long life is in her hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. So she is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who hold her fast. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth, and by understanding he established the heavens. He says right there in verse 14, that profit will be yours. There will be something to gain if you choose wisdom. Verse 16, he says that there's long life is in her hand. If you want to live a good long life, be wise. Riches and honor follow her in verse 16 as well. We could read through the end of the chapter, but we could look at verse 17 and see that there's pleasantness and peacefulness that follow the one who is wise. Verse 18, the tree of life is there, a picture throughout Scripture of what is good and wholesome and godly. The tree of life is there. In verse 22, it says that those who follow wisdom have life to their soul. She gives life to their souls. And then verse 23, down in verse 23, he says, then you will walk in your way securely if you follow wisdom, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, he says, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden fear, nor of the onslaught of the wicked when it comes, for the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. There's a lot of things to be scared of in this life, isn't there? A lot of things are scary. You know, you watch the news nowadays and everything is scary. There's nothing going right in the world. And to some extent, that's true. But if you want to live a fear-free life, the answer is to be wise. The answer is to do wise things, to be wise. And so the father concludes there, verse 32. We'll wrap up this chapter here. Look at verse 32. For the devious are an abomination to the Lord, but he is intimate with the upright. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the dwelling of the righteous. Though he scoffs at the scoffers, yet he gives grace to the afflicted. The wise will inherit honor, but fools display dishonor. Father tells us that there is unparalleled blessings to the wise, to those who are wise. Does all that seem worthwhile to you? Would peace be good in our life? Would lacking fear be a good thing in our life? Would being wealthy and having our vats and our barns filled, would that be a good thing? I think we would all say, yes, of course that would be good. We would love that if that were to happen in our life. The Father says, here's the way to do it. Be wise. Listen to the voice of wisdom, not to the voice of folly. So chapter 4, the Father says, get wisdom. Whatever you have to do, get wisdom. Do not let wisdom get away. He says in chapter 4, verse 13, take hold of instruction. Do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life. Don't let wisdom go. Once you attain wisdom, never, ever, ever let it go. It's that important to maintain wisdom. He says down in verse 23, this is chapter 4, verse 23, watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth and put devious speech far from you. Let your eyes look directly ahead and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Watch the path of your feet and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right nor to the left. Turn your foot from evil. He says, Get wisdom. Be wise. Be committed to wisdom in everything you do. So the father tells the son, get wisdom. Is wisdom worth it? The father would say, absolutely it is. But the father is fair, right? The father presents both sides of the coin. He doesn't leave it just at that. He goes on to tell him the same thing about foolishness, or asks him the same question about foolishness. Consider folly, the voice of the sinners that called out at the beginning of the book. Is foolishness worth it? Chapters 5 and 6 focus on this question, on whether or not foolishness is worthy of our time and our attention. Don't forget about that other voice calling us. Foolishness promised us pretty great things as well. Foolishness promised that if we follow in their path, that we will be blessed, that we will have fun, that we will have riches and spoils and all of the good things that come in life. In fact, the father acknowledges that foolishness offers some good things. Look at chapter 5 and verse 3. The lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. I'm going to talk about something that seems really, really good and is really, really pleasant and is really, really nice. Foolishness fits that bill. There are few things in life that are as fun as folly. There are few things in life that are as enjoyable as sin. And for a while, this sin, this foolishness, may actually seem like it's doing good in your life. It may feel great. It may be exhilarating. It may be full of fun and enjoyment. But what the father encourages the son to realize is that folly has its consequences. Look down at chapter 5 and verse 4. He says in verse 3 that her, you know, it looks good, it feels good, smoother than honey, all of that. But, verse 4, in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold of Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways are unstable. She does not know it. Sin has its consequences. Following foolishness will zap you of all of your resources. Did you know that? They promise you blessing. They promise you good and spoil and all of that. But following foolishness will zap you of all of your resources. Your strength, your wealth, everything. That's what the father says in verse 9. You will give your vigor to others and your years to the cruel one. And strangers will be filled with your strength. And your hard-earned goods will go to the house of an alien. And you groan at your final end when your flesh and your body are consumed. Foolishness leads you down a path that may feel good at the beginning, but by the time you're done, everything about you is gone. Everything you own, everything you love. Everything foolishness promises you, the blessing, the spoil, the wealth, the enjoyment, everything that they promise you is stripped away from you in the end. Foolishness, the father says, will do bad things in your life. And there are three examples, I think, that the father gives here at the last part of chapter 5 and into chapter 6. The father gives three examples about bad things in your life that foolishness will do. He talks about women, he talks about money, and he talks about work. Women, money, and work. And he says there in chapter 5 that premarital sex or extramarital sex may seem glamorous, it may seem like a good thing, but its consequences are anything but. He says in chapter 5 and verse 20, he says, "For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths. His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. He will die for lack of instruction and the greatness of his folly. He will go astray." You know, we think about wanting to do sinful things. And maybe the sinful things that we want to do have to do with some kind of a sexual sin or something like that, an immoral sin of some kind. And we think about if we could just be free to do whatever we want to do, then all of our problems would be solved. I think that kind of thought has ruined more marriages and has ruined more young people, and has ruined more old people than probably anything. If we could just do whatever we want, if God would just free us to do whatever we want, then all of our problems would be solved, right? That's what we want. We want to be free from our marriage. We want to be free from that kind of restriction. We don't like those kinds of rules. But did you catch what the father told the son? His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. We think that following God is restrictive. We think that following God restricts us from having fun, from doing the things that we want, from doing the things that our body tells us we should want to do. But the fact is, giving in to sin is what restricts us. Giving in to sin is what binds us. It's what ultimately leads us to death, the father would say. He talks about women. Don't be foolish with that, because it leads to bad things. It leads to restriction. It leads to death. He also talks about money in these chapters. He talks about the foolishness of debt. Running up debt and living on other people's money may seem nice, it may seem fun, but the father says it's not. It's not something that is good for you. He says in chapter 6, verse 1, "My son, if you have become surety for your neighbor, have given a pledge for a stranger, if you have been snared with the words of your mouth, have been caught with the words of your mouth, do this then, my son, and deliver yourself. Since you have come into the hand of your neighbor, go humble yourself and importune your neighbor. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter's hand and like a bird from the hand of the fowl." The father says, if you've given yourself to someone else, if you've borrowed from someone else to the point that you're controlled by them, to the point that they own you, then you need to do whatever you can to get out of that. You might say, but it frees us up to do things that we want to do, to get things that we want to get. But the father says, in reality, it will humble you. You will be required to humble yourself. And you will be required to go with sleepless nights. And you will be like the prey of the hunter. Don't be foolish. Be wise. He talks about women. He talks about money. He also talks about work here. The work ethic that we should have. "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no chief officer or ruler prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep?" A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and you will, and your need like an armed man. We're told to be like the ant, to be diligent, to be workers who are not lazy. But if we're not, then we're foolish, the father says. He says, if you don't act like that, you're going to end up in poverty. You're going to end up homeless and hungry. You get the feeling that foolishness is bad just by listening to the father's words? That's certainly the impression we're supposed to get, isn't it? That foolishness does not fulfill the things that it promises us to fulfill. Sure, it may bring in temporary joy. Sure, foolishness may bring us some kind of temporary pleasure, temporary enjoyment, maybe even some kind of temporary gain. But it's not lasting. The joy and the gain. But it does bring lasting hurt. It does bring lasting harm to our souls, to our lives. So the father tells him, just like he did about wisdom. He went through all the pros and cons of wisdom, and then he said, get wisdom. Follow her. Wherever she goes, follow her. He does the same thing with foolishness. Here are all the pros and cons. Now avoid this woman foolishness. Avoid her like nothing else you've ever avoided in your life. A worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who walks with a perverse mouth. Who winks with his eyes, who signals with his feet, who points with his fingers, who with perversity in his heart continually devises evil, who spreads strife. Therefore, his calamity will come suddenly. Instantly, he will be broken, and there will be no healing. The father tells us that the end of the foolish man is calamity. It is destruction. It is death. It may look good. In fact, he says in verse 24, keep you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. It may look good, but its end is fire being taken into the bosom. Verse 27. You can go and you can follow the adulteress. You can see her beauty. You can look at foolishness off in the distance and say, oh, how great it would be if we didn't have those kinds of restrictions. If we didn't have to be wise. If we could just do whatever we wanted. But can a man take fire to himself and not be burned? And the answer to that question is no. There is no way around its consequences. Don't be foolish, the father says. So the last three chapters, chapter 7, 8, and 9, the father has laid out these choices. He says, make the choice. Folly calls you to come and sin with her, to come and be unwise, and wisdom calls you to come and be wise. The choices are presented. You will either choose wisdom or folly. And the Father has diligently encouraged His Son and diligently encouraged us to consider the consequences of both choices. Both choices will have consequences. To choose wisdom means that you'll have life and peace and wealth, the Father says. To choose folly means that you will have passing joy, but ultimately there will be restriction and fear and pain and humility and death. So finally, in these last three chapters, the Father sets up the two choices once again, just as He did in the first two chapters. He sets up the choices again, but this time He presents them as two women vying for the young man's attention. And just as in chapter 1, foolishness called out from the streets, we see it again in chapter 7. Look at chapter 7 with me in verse 6. At the window of my house I looked out through my lattice, and I saw among the naive and discerning among the youths a young man lacking sense. This is foolishness talking. Passing through the streets near her corner, he takes the way to her house, foolishness's house. In the twilight, in the evening, in the middle of the night, and in the darkness, and behold, a woman comes to meet him, dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart. She is boisterous and rebellious. Her feet do not remain at home. She is now in the streets, now in the squares, and lurks by every corner. So she seizes him and kisses him. And with a brazen face, she says to him, I was due to offer peace offerings today. I have paid my vows. Therefore, I have come out to meet you, to seek your presence earnestly, and I have found you. I have spread my couch with coverings, with colored linens of Egypt. I have sprinkled my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us drink our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with caresses, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him. At the full moon, he will come home. With her many persuasions, she entices him. With her flattering lips, she seduces him. Suddenly, he follows her, as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as one in fetters to the discipline of a fool, until an arrow pierces through his liver as a bird hastens to the snare, so he does not know what it will cost him, that it will cost him his life. He paints this picture for us. This young man's walking through the city, and there's this woman standing outside her door, lurking in the shadows, calling out to the son, calling out to him, come in, have a good time with me. My husband is at home. All of the preparations are made. All you have to do is come in and have a good time. Woman folly is going to come looking for you. She's going to come find you. And she's not going to come looking like an ugly monster. No, she's going to come all prettied up. Everything's already going to be ready for you to fall into her trap. Folly is going to offer you all of the best of life. Come, I will give you all of the good things, the great spices, the great wealth, and all of the adoration that you could ever want. She's going to assure that you know, she's going to assure that no one will know if you do just this one thing. You can come in. My husband isn't home. He won't be home for a long time. That's what foolishness says. But she is not enticing you or I because she cares about you or I or our well-being. She entices us because she wants our death, our destruction. The folly that following after folly is like going to the slaughter, the Father says. On the flip side of that, the Father says in chapter 8 that there's another voice calling. Just as in chapter 1, there's another voice calling. But it's not folly this time. This time it is woman wisdom. He picks up in verse 1 of chapter 8. Does not wisdom call and understanding lift up her voice? On top of the heights beside the way where the path meet, she takes her stand. Beside the gates, at the opening to the city, at the entrance of the door, she cries out, to you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O naive ones, understand prudence. And O fools, understand wisdom. Listen, for I will speak noble things, and the opening of my lips will reveal right things. For my mouth will utter truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the utterances of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing crooked or perverted in them. They are all straightforward to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge. Take my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than the choicest gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and all desirable things cannot compare with her. Wisdom calls out too, but she's not lurking in the shadows. She's standing at the front of the city gate, right where everyone can see her, where everyone passes by. She stands at the crossroads where you have to make a choice. Will you follow wisdom or will you follow foolishness? She speaks only true things, whereas folly speaks anything that you want, anything to get you to go against what is right and what is good. Wisdom speaks true and good things. And she offers you more than the best of life. Remember, folly said, come in, I'll give you the spices, I'll give you the riches. But wisdom says, what I have to offer to you is better than the wealth, better than the jewels, better than the riches that the life that this life has to offer. And perhaps most striking contrast is that woman wisdom is actually concerned for your well-being. It's concerned for you and what you do with your life. Down at the end of the chapter, I'm skipping down to verse 32 of chapter 8. Now therefore, O sons, listen to me. For blessed are they who keep my ways. Heed instruction and be wise, and do not neglect it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at my doorposts. For he who finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me injures himself. All those who hate me love death. Both wisdom and folly have made their case. They call out from the streets to you to make you listen, to entice you, to bring you to their side. So the question is presented in chapter 9. Which will you choose? Will you be wise? Will you follow woman wisdom into the paths of life? Or will you choose woman folly? Wisdom has built her house, chapter 9 says. She has hewn out seven pillars. She has prepared her food. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her maidens. She calls from the tops of the heights of the city, whoever is naive, let him turn in here. To him who lacks understanding, she says, come, eat of my food and drink of the wine I have mixed. Forsake your folly and live, and proceed in the way of understanding. Woman folly is boisterous, verse 13 tells us. She is naive and knows nothing. She sits at the doorway of her house, on a seat by the high places of the city, calling to those who pass by, who are making their path straight. Whoever is naive, let him turn in here. And to him who lacks understanding, she says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. Which will you choose? Which woman's house will you enter for your life? Which woman's house will you enter with every single choice that you make? Because that's the reality of the situation. Every choice that is presented to you, you have the option to be wise and to follow wisdom's counsel, or to be foolish and follow folly's counsel. This is life's most important choice. And I don't say that lightly. This is life's most important choice. We choose between wisdom and folly in every decision that we make. Whether it be the friends and the company that we keep, the hobbies that we engage in, the jobs that we take, are you going to be wise or are you going to be foolish? But it's larger than that. It's larger than every decision that we make. It's about what kind of people we're going to choose to be. Will you choose to be a wise person? Or will you choose to be a foolish person? Ultimately, this choice is not just about wisdom and folly. Ultimately, this choice is about God and the world. Will you follow God? Will you follow the wisdom of God, or will you follow the world and the foolishness that it offers? I want to just show you one more thing here in chapter 9. Look in chapter 9 down at verse 3. As it describes the final plea of wisdom, it says she's standing at her house. She's hewn out seven pillars. And down in verse 3, it says, she has sent out her maidens. She calls from the tops of the heights of the city. That's where woman wisdom sits. At the very highest point in the city, so that everyone can see her. Everyone knows where she is. If you want wisdom, it's not hard to find her. But I want you to notice something else here in chapter 9. Look down at verse 14. As woman folly makes her final plea, it tells us that she sits at the doorway of her house as well. And her house is on the high places of the city. Once again, folly is sitting on the high point of the city. Here's the picture I want you to think about. You're walking through a city. You're walking down this path and there's a hill, two very great high places on either side. And on the top of one is woman wisdom, and she's calling out to you, begging for you to come and turn aside. And on the other hill is woman folly, and she's calling out and begging for you to turn to the side. That picture is not unlike cities in the ancient world. We don't have that kind of thing today necessarily, but that picture is not unlike what would happen in the ancient world. But instead of women calling out from the hills, it was gods calling out from the hills. In the ancient world, you could know exactly what deity a city worshipped based on the highest point of the city. There would be a temple. There'd be a temple sitting there. And as soon as you walked into the city, you'd see this temple. They'd be in Corinth, and they have the great Acrocorinth, and this huge, huge mountain beside the city. They'd have this temple sitting up there, and you knew exactly who the city of Corinth worshipped, right? You knew where to go to serve the deity of that city. And the same is true of Jerusalem, was it not? You remember the city of Jerusalem had a hill called Mount Zion. And on Mount Zion sat the temple of God. When you walked into the city of Jerusalem, there's no question about who they worshipped. They worshipped Yahweh, the God of the Israelites. When you walked into an ancient city, you could tell immediately what gods they worshipped, what God was their God, because the temples were on the highest hills in the city. As you walk through the city of life, wisdom calls you from one hill. That is to say, God calls you from his high and lofty place. But on the other hand, folly calls you from another hill. The gods of the world, the deities that surround us. You say, wait a minute. We don't have gods like that today. People don't worship gods like that today. But the fact is, when we set our desires above God's desires, we set ourselves up as deities. We put ourselves on that even playing field with God. And we say that we can choose our own way. So the choice is not just about making good choices. It is about making good choices. But the choice that the Father presents is really about who you're going to be and who you're going to serve. The choice is yours to make. Will you choose God's wisdom as she calls out to you from the hill? Or will you choose your own wisdom, which is in reality foolishness before God? The choice is each and every one of ours to make. Will you choose God, or will you choose the world?